Some technical issues, people calling in, and people had planned to call in on different things, but I think we can cover the first at least four items on our agenda, and then maybe hop around, and if we need to take a recess or something, we can. We'll just cover what we can cover, because I don't know the time frame of some of the other things. So we'll hop around a little bit, but I think if somebody is scheduled to call in, we'll certainly shove those things down to the end so that they can still do that. So with that, I'm going to call the meeting July 20th, 2023, meeting of the Board of Minerals and Environment to order. Secretary, call the roll.
Blumhardt?
Here.
Greenfield?
Here.
Carpin?
Here.
Morris?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Chairman Hay?
Here. Quorum present. I think I'll hold off on the reading of the internet side of that, and we'll move, first of all, before we move into the approval of the minutes, I want to just take a short moment to thank John Sheets for his service on the board. His term was expired here, I think, at the end of June. John brought a lot of technical understanding and knowledge to the board, which I appreciated a lot, especially in the area of the mining and industry. So just a shout out to thank John for his service, and then we'll miss him on the board. Next item of business is the approval of the minutes for May 18th, 2023. Additions or corrections to the minutes by the board? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of May 18, 19, 2023.
Blumhardt moves to approve.
Motion by Blumhardt. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Greenfield. Further discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, Secretary, call the roll. Approval of the minutes.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
And Chairman Hay?
Aye. Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Why don't we, I don't know if Ms. Jacobson, is there anybody that you're aware of that's calling in regarding the hazardous waste? Or Brenda, have you, anybody determined that? So we have opened this as a public meeting, so there's no problem with that. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's move to the public hearing, Ms. Jacobson.
Chairman Hay, members of the board. My name is Carrie Jacobson. Can you hear me okay?
No. Can we get that? Published in 11 newspapers across the state.
providing a minimum 45-day comment period. The public notices were published on May 31st in the Aberdeen American News, the Argus Leader, Black Hills Pioneer, Brookings Register, the Daily Press in Dakotan, Yankton, here in Plainsman, the Madison Daily Leader, Mitchell Republic, Peer Capital Journal, Rapid City Journal, and the Watertown Public Opinion.
Ms. Jacobson, maybe just a little closer. Well, to you. There you go. Thank you.
A copy of the public notice and proposed rule were available electronically through a link on the state's hazardous waste program website, the DANR's public notice website, as well as the state's rules.sd.gov website. Hard copies of the public notice were mailed via postal mail to the BME's interested party list. To those wishing physical paper copies, electronic copies were also sent by email to individuals who requested copies in that form. No amendments, data, opinions, or arguments for or against were raised during the 45-day comment period. We did receive one request for clarification regarding the rule update's impact to one particular industry, the oil and gas industry, and one request for a copy of the proposed rule. Proposed rules were also sent to the State Bureau of Finance and Management as well as the Legislative Research Council at the end of May. The BFM concurred with the state's calculation of $0 impact to state agencies, local subdivisions, and small businesses. After receiving edits from the LRC last week, DANR staff worked with the Legislative Research Council's attorney regarding farmer style. Those changes are reflected in the copies that were sent last week to you and available today. With your concurrence, I can next provide an overview regarding the proposed update to the rules. Any questions yet at all?
Questions from the board at this point? All right, go ahead.
Okay. From our regulatory section, we did add a section that's titled Incorporation by Reference in ARSC section 7428-2101-1, and that's on page 8 of the draft. That new section was added to address a regulatory structure date certain reference convention that we've used for about the last 30 years in our hazardous waste regulations. That practice involves specifying in each section the date of the CFR being adopted. Over the past 2 years, though, through the program authorization process that we do with EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency has commented on that practice, suggesting that instead of repeating the date of the CFR, we incorporate our reference in each regulatory section, that we do it once up front. So to address that comment, we worked with LRC to make sure that the date certain was provided in all the regulatory sections, leaving no question as to which version of the CFR we are adopting. The result is the revised rule that was provided by email late last week and available today. Essentially, we incorporated the phrase as incorporated by section 7428-2101.01 in those sections. From a regulatory standpoint, there are three basic changes to the regs. The first one is considers aerosol cans. This final rule adds hazardous waste aerosol cans to the universal waste program that currently exists in the hazardous waste rules. The change is meant to benefit a wide variety of operations that generate and manage hazardous waste aerosol cans that are partially used and need to be disposed of as a hazardous waste, such as when a nozzle breaks on a can and has to be disposed of. The rule provisions establish a protective system for managing unusable or wasted aerosol cans and yet eases the regulatory burden for on-site management. The rules also promote the collection and recycling of cans, thereby reducing what is being sent to local landfills for disposal. The sections primarily affected include ARSC 7428-2102, which has to do with the definition section, incorporating 40 CFR Part 260 by reference. as well as ARSD 74283301, which incorporates 40 State Park Part 273, which is where the universal wish rules are found. The second area of regulatory update involves modernizing ignitable liquids determination. This rule finalizes updates to the flashpoint test methods that date from 1978, 1979, and 1980 that has been used to determine whether liquid waste is considered an ignitable hazardous waste. The updates serve to include ASTM international standards that have been developed over the years that successfully establish a liquid splash point. The rule also finalizes what has been guidance to define the word aqueous as meaning 50% water by weight, which is another aspect of the ignitability characteristic in the hazardous waste regulations. The update also corrects cross-references to the U.S. Department of Transportation regulations, removes obsolete information that specifically relates to the ignitability characteristic provisions. The sections affected in the regulations include ARSD 74-2821-01, which again lists the definitions found in 40 CFR 260, as well as ARSD 74-2822-01, which incorporates 40 CFR 261 waste characteristics. The third area of regulatory update involves the Canada Import Export Recovery and Disposal Code changes. This rule makes conforming changes to notices and movement documents used for imports and exports from and to Canada. The changes reflect regulatory updates that Canada made regarding those shipments and the respective documents that involve those shipments. The affected sections and our way.
It says you're joining the meeting, but we can't hear anything.
We're in.
Oh, wait a minute. Something might have just happened here. Hang on.
The affected sections.
I can hear noise now.
Sorry.
Okay,
I think you're hooked into the meeting, so if you can mute your phones or just not talk. Because the meeting is underway.
Thank you.
I know who that was.
I don't know who it was.
Could the speaker who was just speaking identify yourself, please?
Yeah, this is Gary Hayes.
Okay, great, Gary.
And this is Mike Gallagher with Beeling & Sons.
Okay. Sounds like we had a technical problem earlier. It looks like we've got it fixed. So, Gary, for your information, we just covered a few of the agenda items where we knew people weren't calling in, such as approval minutes and the. Now we're just moving and discussing the hazardous waste public hearing. Carrie Jacobson from the state is making her presentation right now, so that's where we're at in terms of the meeting agenda.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Jacobson.
The Canada Import Export Recovery and Disposal Code changes, the sections that are affected is in 74-28-2301, which adopts 40 CFR 262.81 through 262.84. Essentially, that concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay. I apologize for the interruptions, but obviously there's not much we can do about it right now. Questions for Ms. Jacobson from the board? Any questions? Any questions from any member of the audience on this? Consider the hazardous waste amendments. Hearing none, we'll need a motion to approve this, will we not, Ms. Jacobson? The amendments. So I'll entertain a motion concerning the amendments to ARSD 7428 regarding hazardous waste, as presented.
Greenfield moves approval.
Motion by Greenfield to approve. Is there a second?
Seconds.
Second by Carpen. Discussion on the motion to approve. Hearing none, Secretary will call the roll on approval of the hazardous waste amendments.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hay?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hay?
Aye. Motion carried. Motion approved. Okay, just for the edification of people in the audience, Board Member Gary Hay is appearing telephonically, and so he will be participating in our votes today as we move forward on various matters. Just to back up a second, I would like to make sure and kind of go back to a statement we usually make at the beginning of the meetings of welcoming people that are listening online or on phone. For those in the audience and board members, the microphones used for our online listeners are located throughout the room and are very sensitive. Any side conversations may be picked up and heard by people listening online. For the benefit of our online listeners, please identify yourself before speaking. For our online listeners, if you will step away for a while, or if you step away for a while, please note that there may occasionally be breaks or recesses during the meeting. During those breaks, the audio stream is paused, so if you don't hear anything or hear music, you may need to wait a while until the meeting resumes. Also, agenda items may be delayed by prior agenda items, so the meeting may not be on schedule, such as today. Today's meeting is being recorded and the audio will be made available online. To find the online recording, do a web search for South Dakota Boards and Portals Commissions. I'm sorry, South Dakota Boards and Commissions Portal. Follow the link and select the name of the board.
Chairman Hay,
yes.
Can we just take a real quick break? We have a notary public here to notarize your signature on the approval of the rules.
Okay.
So then she can go back to her office if you
okay.
want to sign.
Okay, we'll take a very brief recess, a minute, and we'll be back.
It's Patty. She's our notary.
Do you have her $10 fee?
Can you cover that, Bob?
I get $2 bills from Bob's.
From where?
He's done right here.
Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order, and I think we'll move on to the next item of business, the mining issues consent calendar. Mr. Klein?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here to present the consent calendar and answer any questions the board members may have.
Questions from the board members on the consent calendar?
Morris moves to approve.
Motion by Morris to approve the consent calendar is second.
Peterson second.
Second by Peterson. Any further comments or discussion on the consent calendar? Hearing none, Secretary, call the roll on the motion.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hay? Carpen?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hay?
Aye. Motion carries. Did you get Gary's vote or is he off now again?
I don't think he's on there. Okay.
Well, we have a quorum enough to pass the measure, so we will approve the motion. Mr. Holm, did we decide whether we can move forward with the post-closure change of bonding matter?
Yeah, I think we can.
So. Mr. Zietlow's here, also present for Morf, so
Well,
if it's working.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Some things are working, just not everything.
It's all my life.
Wharf Resources is asking the board to approve the exchange of a portion of a United States Fire Insurance Surety Bond, which serves as part of Wharf's post-closure financial insurance, for a new surety bond issued by Ascot Surety and Capital Company. I'm not sure if Stephanie Kuntz of Marsh, with Wharf's bond brokers, on the line. If you are, Stephanie, could you just acknowledge your presence? Yeah, we will continue on. I'll refer to the handout that was sent in the board package. First of all, it's on the screen here. We have three surety companies that have issued bonds to cover the current post-closure bond amount of $38.3 million. The one that Wharf is wanting to exchange today is the United States Fire Insurance Company surety bond. In the amount of $16,800,000. Next slide. On June 26, 2023, Wharf submitted a new surety bond from Ascot Surety and Casualty Company in the amount of they also, at the same time, submitted a rider to the existing United States Fire Insurance Company surety bond, which reduces the existing $16.8 million bond by the same amount as the Ascot surety bond for a new bond amount of $7,532,923. Information on Ascot Surety and Casualty Company was included in the board package. The department has reviewed the ratings for Ascot Surety and Casualty Company, which are, next slide. The only rating that we could find was from AM Best. They have an excellent rating of A for financial strength. They also have an A-plus rating of A-plus long-term, which is also excellent. And the outlook is also stable. And as you can see, Ascot Surety and Casualty Company is a U.S. Treasury certified company. Please note that the surety exchange does not increase the current $38.3 million post-closure financial insurance. Assuming the board approves the $4,289,400 increase in the post-closure financial insurance amount for the Boston expansion, my permit application, that amount will be covered by another surety bond, which will be submitted for approval by the board at its next meeting. The department's recommendation is to accept the rider to surety bond number 612-408-648, United States Fire Insurance Company, decreasing the financial insurance amount to $7,532,923, and accept surety bond number SURU 221-0000161, Ascot Surety and Casualty Company,
disconnected.
In the amount of $9,267,077.
Here, this is Glenn. Is that Ascot, are they relatively new? Because looking at their stuff, and then I went and looked them up, boy, there's not much out there.
Yeah, they are a new company. That I noticed that also when we were reviewing this. Like I said, the only rating I could find was the AM Best, and that was pretty good for AM Best ratings. I also did find some on one of their ultimate parent is the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board. And under Standard & Poor's, they were rated AAA.
You are the only participant.
And Moody's also had a AAA bond rating, which are the highest ratings they have. So.
Yeah. Well, you saw the same thing I did, but yep. I just looked and I thought, boy, that's a relatively new company.
Yep, it is.
You know, I mean, it's still $9 million of bonding we're putting out with a company that doesn't have a lot of history.
No.
And so.
That's why I was hoping Stephanie Coons could join in on the call today to answer some of those questions. And fortunately, I don't think she's on, so.
Well, we're just going to hope we never have to use them. So
yeah.
That's, but I'm just saying it. This makes you think, anyway.
Yeah, I think we'll just continue monitoring it during when we get our annual reports in at the end of every year, and just monitor the county. And if I see something that's if they're going downhill or something, I will let Wharf know right away, and we'll exchange it for another surety bond if we need to.
Okay. Is there any reason as far as flipping that back over to the other side, United State Fire Insurance, is there any issue with them that they are reducing down or need or wanting to reduce down their portion of this shared bond?
I might let Matt talk about that for a minute, why they're doing this, but U.S. Fire Insurance, they have good ratings too, and rating-wise, there's really no reason for them to be decreasing their bond amount. They meet all the requirements. They're under their underwriting capability or their limits. So, Matt, is there any reason why you guys are doing this exchange or that you could address? Or?
Go ahead, Matt. Okay.
Matt Thilo, environmental manager for work. It's, if you recall, about a year, year and a half ago, I can't remember if it was Stephanie or another Marsh entity was explaining, very much like Eric goes through an annual review more frequently for the bonds that are held, you know, for the state, we do the same thing. And as the company identifies, you know, entities that have either put proposals forward or better suited, it's much more than just a wharf. These are all under poor. And as we get opportunities for another bond-holding entity that is better suited, and maybe it may be that they have a bigger piece of some of the other core operations, but they still have a piece that can be applied to work. That's kind of what we have here in this scenario. So it's, you have to look at it, the bigger picture for the whole company, and this was able to get us a little bit better situation, but still a fully rated entity for a portion of the bond that was held that ASCOC can pick up.
Okay. Any questions from the board for Mr. Zelo or for Eric? Bond situation.
Greg, Eric, do we ever look at whatever the bonding company covers for us as that relates to the total exposure of the bond company? So it might be $9 million here and they have a total of X amount out. Is that one of the calculations or a criteria that we look at?
I know some of these sure companies, they have several bonds with us, and I do look at, see how much they have out with us. With regard to their other bonds, I guess I really don't know how to look at, you know, their overall health. I rely on like the AM Best ratings and stuff, which I assume they look at that information too. So.
Yeah, mine wasn't a criticism, it was just it was a, do we look at that?
No, it's I'm open for suggestions on how we can better evaluate the bonding companies and banks. So.
Nothing further, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else? Is there? I'm sorry. So, yeah, is there any practical reason why they're remain unrated by the other reviewers?
My guess is that they're just a newer company. I know there's some surety companies that I review that are only rated by one or two of the companies, and for some reason not the others. Some are rated by AM Best and Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch's. So it's just, I really don't know the right reason why some companies are rated and others aren't. So.
But you're comfortable in your research and recommendation board of ASCOT?
Yes, I share Glenn's concern that they are a newer company, but I think we will just continue monitoring their financial ratings and make sure, and if we see any issues, we will let Wharf know right away about doing an exchange of that surety bonds.
Okay. Further questions? So I think I'll split that, bifurcate that vote for, first of all, the let's entertain a motion to approve the reduction by U.S. Fire Insurance Company from $16,800,000 to $7,532,923. Entertain a motion to approve that reduction.
Morris moves.
Motion by Morris, or second?
Carpen seconds.
One second by Carpen. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, the secretary will call the roll.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hay?
Aye. Motion carries. That is, a reduction is approved. I guess I should have taken the in reverse order than that, but now we'll take up the matter of the replacement of the reduction by Ascot Surety and Casualty Company to accept bond number SURU 221-0000161 in the amount of $9,267,077. I hear a motion to approve.
Morris moves.
Motion by Morris, second.
Carpen seconds.
Seconded by Kent Carpen. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, secretary, call the roll on the motion to approve.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Hay?
Aye. Motion carries. Okay. Do we have any issue with the next, as far as somebody wanting to appear on the next motion for, next agenda item, request for 5-year extension of temporary cessation for Dakota Stone.
Okay, as required under SDCL 45-6B3, subsection 8C, Dakota Stone Incorporated, which was formerly Dakota Granite, is requesting the board grant a 5-year extension of the period of temporary cessation for its granite quarry operation covered under Large Scale Mine Permit 318. The quarry is located approximately 6 miles east of Millbank, South Dakota. Before the meeting, Dakota Stone's request to the board was included in the board packet. The original 5-year period of temporary cessation was issued by the department on December 18, 2018, since it was uncontested as required under ARSD 7429-096. As stated in the request, Dakota Stone is not currently marketing the granite at the quarry since there is no demand for that type available at the site. Mining will resume once there is a demand for the granite. All maintenance activities at the mine will continue during the 5-year extension period. The period of temporary cessation cannot continue for more than 10 years. Under SDCL 45-6B3, subsection 8C, if Dakota Stone does not resume production by December 18, 2028, the mine permit will be terminated and Dakota Stone will be required to reclaim the quarry area. Our recommendation is to approve the extension of the temporary cessation period from Mine Permit 318 for another 5 years to expire on December 18th, 2028.
Questions from the board from Mr. Holm?
Chairman Hay.
Mr. Morris.
Eric, So they don't get another request for extension after 2028?
That's correct.
And to what level, to what level would they have to engage in mining activities to at least begin a process where they could say, well, we mined it, and now we should start from zero again?
For this particular mine site, I think we'd like to see them removing some granite blocks out of the quarry and actually showing that they are mining something. They are producing some granite that they can report on the annual report. They do currently have some blocks in storage on the drop pile, and just removing those blocks, that would not constitute production in our mine site.
But there does have to be some active mining to the satisfaction of the department in order to reset any request for extension.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Have we had any issues with them in the past, violations, things like that?
No, they're a company to work with. Their quarries hardly change from year to year. In fact, the grout piles are waste granite. They're finding ways to get that crushed down where eventually all those piles will disappear.
Okay, thank you. Further questions from the board?
If they want to start actively mining, do they provide you with notice and then operate under their old permit?
Yeah, they will send us a letter saying we're resuming production on this date, and then they will operate under the terms and conditions of their permit.
Thanks.
Further questions? Hearing none, I entertain a motion to approve.
Blumhardt moves to approve.
Motion by Blumhardt, second.
Greenfield, second.
Seconded by Greenfield. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, Secretary, call the roll.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hay?
Aye. Motion carries. So, is Gary back off then?
I have no idea what's going on.
I don't think he's on. We're trying. The room itself isn't staying connected.
I just wondered if he was here otherwise by...
I got a text message from my Gall RP lane. He says they're still on the phone, but they can't hear anything.
Okay.
So...
So, why don't we do this? You may have to pass on a question, as should the board have them, but I think we'll move forward.
Okay.
And then let's see if there's a question. If there is, maybe you can pass it on, or we can just call him and...
Yeah, I do have his number, so
okay. And then we can use the mic and do it old school, but we can do it. All right, next order of business is the transfer of liability and release of surety for Pete Lean & Sons, permit 57.
Yeah, I assume Mike isn't online. If you are, Mike, just speak up, I guess. If board members during the November 2020 meeting, the Board of Minerals Environment released 148.24 acres of reclaimed land from a cremation liability under Pete Lean's Mine Permit 57. If you refer to the maps in the board package, which was supposed to be up on the screen, but we'll refer to the handout. The green outlined areas are the areas the board released from reclamation liability during that meeting. On February 23rd, 2021, Pete Lean obtained mine license 20-1091 from the Minerals Mining and Superfund program. In March 2021, the Minerals Mining and Superfund program transferred 253.16 acres from the mine permit to the mine license. And all those areas aren't outlined on here. They're just sort of those clear areas on there. This left 6.65 acres of reclaimed land that did not meet release criteria. And those two areas are outlined in yellow on that map. And there's another 11.51 acres undergoing final reclamation that remain under Mine Permit 57. And those are in the tan crosshatch areas. There's like five of them on there. Now it's for a total of 18.16 acres that remained under Mine Permit 57. I inspected the remaining Permit 57 acreage on June 1st of this year. The 6.65 acres, if you want to refer to the next map that was in your package, the 6.65 acres of previously reclaimed land, those now meet release criteria, and those are in the green crosshatched areas on that new other map. Of the 11.51 acres undergoing reclamation in 2020, 3.36 acres are not reclaimed at this time, and those are in blue crosshatched areas. One of the areas is being used as a storage area for pre-stressed, pre-cast concrete pole tables.
You are the only participant.
Two of the areas reclaimed in 2020 meet release criteria, and those are to the north, again in the green crosshatched areas. The southernmost reclaimed area in 2020 currently has an oxysweed infestation and does not meet reuse criteria. However, since these areas could be redisturbed in the future for pre-stressed, precast concrete wall protection and other uses in the near future, Pete Lee has requested those areas be transferred to mine license 21-1091 instead of being released. Our recommendation is to transfer the remaining 18.16 acres from large scale mine permit 57 to mine license 21-1091 and release surety bond number 3009748, Western Surety Company, the amount of $204,300.
Questions from the board?
Chairman Hague.
Mr. Morris.
Eric, you've probably explained this to me before, but what's the advantage of transferring it to a mine license and out of the permit?
Basically, all the mining has been done under this quarry. There's really nothing left to mine under permit 57. It's being used now as more of a support area for the mine license mining over across the road in the Blackhawk Quarry. And as you can see on that map, the yellow outline is everything that they want to have covered under the mine license.
Okay. And are you satisfied in light of the fact that there are some areas that are still unreclaimed, that they will reclaim them and that there's sufficient surety to take care of any reclamation if they fail to do so?
Yes, unfortunately with the mine license, we can only require at the most $20,000. So there's $20,000 that will cover the reclamation under the mine license. And then the noxious area, Peeling has committed to getting that infestation under control under the mine license.
And have they been cooperative with you in terms of any, all your requests about getting the reclamation completed?
Yes, they've got out there after we released the other acreage, and they got out there and they played tops and did any regrading and seeded the areas. And when I looked out there, a lot of the vegetation would meet release criteria if they were going to do an ultimate release on those.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions from the board?
It's unorthodox, but I believe Mike Gallier is on my phone right now, so if you have questions from him, you can ask.
From Pete Lee?
Yes, okay. I connected my phone to the meeting.
Mike, are you on the phone there?
Mike, can you hear us?
Ms. Hudson, your phone doesn't even work in this place.
I know, right? He was there. I just spoke with him. I know he's there.
Speaker.
Okay, now try again.
Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Thank you very much. So the question that I'm wondering about is the going from the $204,000 bond to the 20 and whether there's the adequacy of the amount there. I know what the 20 is the maximum of the license, but is there any concern that the difference between the $20,000 and $204,000?
Yeah, there is.
It's quite obvious.
It's concerning, but that's what we're allowed under the law. And like I said, the mining is complete under this, according to the mine permit. There's really nothing there left for mining. Like I said, if we weren't transferring acreage, those reclaimed acres wouldn't be release criteria. And also, the problem with the permit is the post-mine land use is pasture, which with them still using the area and they're redisturbing things, that ain't going to be met for probably a very long time. Under the mine license, the post-mine land use is industrial, so they'll be able to fashion everything into industrial uses in that area.
Okay.
Chairman Hague.
Mr. Morris, question.
since we're going from the permit, substantial reduction in the surety, to the license and a cap of $20,000, have you received any type, or have you directed a deadline for them to complete the reclamation?
Basically, the wine license has a completion date on it. I don't have that information on me, but there is a definite completion date under the wine license that was published in the notice of intent that was published in the newspaper.
Thank you, Eric.
Mike, do you have any comments you'd like to add concerning this item?
Your call will be taken.
I'm afraid I missed a bunch of your conversation that you had earlier, but no, not at this time, other than basically all the other air quality, water quality, and solid waste permits that we have in this area will remain in place. I think I heard a little bit about the post-mine land use being industrial and or commercial. Basically, that falls into place for the Rapid City and Pennington County plans for this area. So we are using up part of that area for some precast concrete work that we're doing right now. That's a new part of our business that we're getting into. So some of this land is being dedicated to that. So I think I heard a little bit about what Eric said about, the permit required for pasture land. Basically, a bunch of this land has already been or is ready for release. So it was going to be, once released, it was probably going to be dedicated towards industrial uses anyway. So in my mind, this kind of makes sense to make this transfer.
You are the only participant.
All right. Based on Mike's comments, did the board member have any more questions? Okay. At this time, then, entertain a motion.
Blumhardt moves to approve.
Motion by Blumhardt to approve. Is there a second?
Morris seconds.
Morris second. Moved and seconded. Further discussion on the motion to approve the transfer of liability and release of surety.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Carpenter.
Yes, I think I will probably agree and vote for the resolution here, but it is concerning that the $204,000 down to $20,000, there's a little man in the back of my head saying, maybe not, but like I says, it's we're putting faith in the department on this one.
Yeah. Mr. Greenfield.
Eric, so what hasn't been reclaimed is basically reclaimed. Is that what you're?
No, I was speaking that we already transferred part of it to the mine license that they were already using, so. That was already done, so what I'm talking about is everything left under the permit, everything been reclaimed under that.
So those cross-hatched areas still need to be, has any reclamation been done on the cross-hatched areas?
Yes, there has. The basically, if you refer to that new map that I got, the green cross-hatched areas, all those have been reclaimed.
Right.
The only two areas are in the blue cross-hatched there that one is being used to store their tables for their precast concrete.
And for the parts that haven't been reclaimed, what would be your guess on how much it would cost to reclaim those if they had to be reclaimed?
The $204,000, that would be part of it. When we calculated a bond several years ago, it was for the whole quarry. And then we left out all the reclaimed areas that they previously reclaimed. So
that $204,000 was the original amount, but some of that risk has been removed because some of the areas are already reclaimed?
That's correct.
Okay. I think I'm... And percentage-wise, can you give me an idea?
Let's see, of what's been reclaimed at that site. We got re-released 148. unreclaimed portion was, let's see, probably I'd say roughly around 50% has been reclaimed to that quarry. So.
All right. Any further discussion?
Chairman.
Mr. Morris.
Eric, under this, the mine license of $20,000, I know that we've, well, on the consent decree areas, I think it's $2,000 per site, and then if you have 50 sites, the law caps it at $20,000?
Yeah, basically it's $500 per acre, and then it's $1,000 statewide.
Okay.
That's what the debt was now. The debt would be there.
So, when we look at this map, there's a lot of white.
Yep.
That's all unclaimed at the moment.
Yep.
And so my understanding is what Pete Lean and Sons is doing is using the stuff in white for operations.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of it's coming over from their Blackhawk quarry across the road from this quarry.
Okay. But under the $20,000, so are we by transferring this to the mine license and capping at $20,000, are we? Is there any surety that would cover the reclamation of the area which they are presently using for operations?
That $20,000 would be for their current operations. And with this site, where normally when there's a license, it covers several sites. This one particular site, we just have the one mine license and the one bond. So that $20,000 will be used for this. We won't have to worry about it covering other sites as the normal license for this.
And you've been involved with the Pete Lean operation for how many years?
Oh, since I started a long time ago.
1984. Plus 20 years?
Yeah.
Okay. So from your standpoint, as the individual who's responsible in the department, are you satisfied with the history that Pete Lean has undertaken and that they've responded to any and all of your requests for to take action?
Yes, I've been doing inspection of these sites for many years, and anything I see that needs correction or something, they're pretty good at getting out and getting it fixed.
Okay. Thank you, Eric.
Further questions? I guess I'm kind of with Doyle on this one, and our trust in Eric, obviously, so I think I'll be able to support it. Further consideration? Not secretary, call the roll on the motion.
Blumhart?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hay?
Aye. Motion carries. Transfer is approved. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Hello, this is Gary Hay. I'm connected again.
Okay, great. You're connected.
Is he on your phone?
He's on my phone. I connected my phone to the Teams meeting, but this thing.
We're going to have to figure out a way to make it louder.
That's, I know.
That's Gary, did you want to, did you hear that discussion?
Yes, I did.
Would you like to enter a vote on the record?
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you vote? Okay. I for approval. Okay, thank you. The record will note Gary's vote of approval. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We're sorry, Gary, for this, how we're going about this, but we're glad to have you connected. So we'll move on to the next item of business, renewal of the memorandum. I know I repeated myself.
There we go. I think everybody's connected to the room now. Can everybody hear me?
Gary, can you hear us?
Not all at once.
Bobby, there's a red microphone with a line through it, which means we're muted.
Yeah.
Right?
All right. Hold on.
I'm interested to see how the scrivener for the minutes records the beeps.
Yeah.
That might be somebody else.
It'll scribble out the minutes.
I want those beeps.
Okay, it says everybody should be unmuted, so despite what the screen says, can people hear me?
Oh, good.
Huh?
On the top, there's a mute button.
It looks, I've oh, seen the number one. So
okay, there we go.
There we go. There we go.
Thanks, up.
All right, this is Chairman Rex Haig. We're back in, well, we're continuing our meeting of July 20th. Somebody is wanting to enter a comment or appearance. Can you hear us now? Can you just respond, if you will? How about Gary? Are you still there? Simon. Gary, are you still there?
Simon Garfunkel.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Okay. Next order of business is the renewal of the Memorandum of Understanding with the U.S. Forest Service for mineral operations on Forest Service lands. Ms. Hutz?
Okay. Hopefully this lasts. All right. So the Memorandum of Understanding, I've been running around too much, so I apologize if I'm not quite with it. So this was initially signed by the board 5 years ago. We had one prior to that standing that had been going for like 20 years. Now we've got it on a 5-year renewal, which is probably much more reasonable. So what I believe was provided to the board in the board packet is the markup of this Memorandum of Understanding. The only changes that were made were administrative, so we had some contacts change. The department changed its name, our division changed its name, our program changed its name, so we had to get all of that updated in the memorandum. And then also Forest Service had some changes as well, since Gary Haig used to be our contact, and now it's Jonathan Manning in the Southern District. So those are our primary changes, and also the signatories at the end. We used to have Turner, now it's Hunter Robertson. So those are really the only changes we had. Everything else has stayed the same. The purpose of the memorandum, if people need to know, this is an agreement between us and the Forest Service on how we handle bonding issues between us and Forest Service for different operations that may be on Forest Service land. And basically what it gives is that we hold the initial bond up to our cap amount, whatever that amount ends up being. And then they would hold any additional bond after that if more is necessary for what we deem necessary for reclamation of a site. So for instance, for a small scale permit, we cap at $2,500. So we would hold the initial $2,500, and if Forest Service says a site needs $8,000 to reclaim, they would hold the additional $5,500 for that.
Has there been any item in the existing contract that's come up, or there's been a conflict or a reason to one side disputing something or other, or has it been operationally pretty good?
Operationally, it's been really good. Usually, we very rarely have to forfeit a bond, thankfully. When we do, that money usually gets handed to Forest Service, and Forest Service will handle most of the reclamation work for these sites because they have equipment on hand and personnel to do that. And then, it's primarily handled through them. So, I mean, yeah, everything has so far worked great under this. So.
All right, questions from the board?
How often does this get used? I mean, we have the memorandum, but is it a daily, weekly, monthly? How many times are we working together?
Well, another part of the agreement is that we have to stay in contact with each other so that if they get an application for somebody who wants to explore or mine on Forest Service property, they let us know so that we know that we have a mine permit application or mineral exploration or mine license that needs to happen. So it helps maintain communications between the two agencies. And frankly, that actually, it actually gets used quite frequently. We maintain really good contact with Mr. Manning because of all the different activities happening up there in Forest Service. So
the last time I remember, it was on Cheyenne River Crossing. Is that one of the ones on an exploration permit? Is that something that would be covered by this?
That was before Roberta's time.
Yeah, right. I think it was, yeah. I don't recall that one. No. So anything, this is primarily for the Black Hills National Forest Service, so anything within the Black Hills Ranger District from covered by the Mystic Ranger Station, that would be covered under this memorandum. So if it's other Forest Service offices, for instance, Fort Pierce or something, grasslands, that's not covered under this memorandum of understanding. Most of our operations, though, specifically for the mineral exploration for gold, though, are in the Black Hills. So it covers all of those that might be on Forest Service property, as well as any mine licenses that might also be on Forest Service property.
Correct. Mr. Wilmar.
Yeah, if I understand or read this, if anything becomes of the in situ uranium mining, that would be covered under this because that's on Forest Service land, isn't it?
I believe at the moment, PowerTech, if that's what you're talking about, that is on private and BLM, and I don't know if there's a portion on Forest Service, but
it's BLM land then.
BLM.
Okay.
This is Gary. There's no Forest Service land involved.
Okay. So it's BLM.
Yeah.
Any other further questions? Gary, is it your request to be removed as a contact person on this memorandum?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Carpenter moves to approve the memorandum of understanding between South Dakota Department of Ag and Natural Resources and the USDA Forest Service Region 2 Black Hills National Forest.
Is there a second?
Peterson, second.
Moved and seconded. Discussion on the motion. Doesn't seem like much substantive changed anything. Further discussion? Hearing none, Secretary, call the roll on approval.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hay?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hay?
Aye. Motion carries. Before we move on to the next matter, I'm going to take a little break, 5 minutes or so, restroom break or whatever anybody needs to do. Thank you. We'll call the meeting, Board of Minerals and Environment meeting back to order. And the next item of business is we're going to reopen or continue the opening of the hearing of the permit of Wharf Industry for determining final decision on Wharf's application for the Boston expansion of large-scale mine permit. Will the parties identify themselves for the record?
Steve Blair, Assistant Attorney General, representing the department.
Thank you.
Kellen Willard, along with Matt Zietlow, on behalf of Wharf Resources, and I'm here in lieu of Dwight Hoover and Max May.
Okay. Ms. Marshall, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Appreciate you acknowledging that. First of all, Ms. Marshall, I'm sorry. And you're appearing on behalf of yourself.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I want to apologize to you for the confusion on regarding my email concerning the potential deferment of this matter. It was based on whether or not a transcript could be prepared and be ready for the meeting, which under the South Dakota statute then allows other board members who were not present but have read the transcript to participate in the vote. And so, since the court reporter, Ms. Bashan, was able to get that record to us in a timely manner that allowed for people to be able to read that transcript. That then provides those members that were not present to then attend this meeting and vote. So I apologize for that confusion. You know, once we sent the notice out, I think the date was correct on the notice of this hearing. And considering my recommended decision to the board. So prior to getting into further discussion and hearing from the parties, I'm just going to identify on the record so it's there's no mistake about it. I will ask Mr. Greenfield, have you had an opportunity to review the transcript?
I have had an opportunity, and I have reviewed the transcript.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Peterson?
Yes, I have reviewed the transcript.
Okay. Both members have indicated that they have reviewed the transcript, so we will proceed. Proceed with discussing the proposed recommendation, but at this time I'll hear from the parties for any argument or record they'd like to make regarding my proposed recommendation. Mr. Willett, would you like to start on behalf of WRF?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. By and large, WRF will just rely on the documents that have been filed with the board and the hearing in May. I would just point out that no objections have been filed by Ms. Marshall or proposed findings and conclusions, and it appears that she has agreed with, I believe, with the department's proposed findings and conclusions. If any questions you have, that's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Blair?
The department's reviewed your proposed findings and decision. Chairman Hagan, we have no objections to the entry of the same.
Thank you. Ms. Marshall, this is the time to provide you an opportunity to render any objections or make any argument concerning those my proposed recommendations. By and large, a lot of those came from the department's proposed recommendations, finding of fact and conclusions of all, but there certainly were changes that I made to those. Ms. Marshall, do you have any comment at this time?
Well, I think I'd like to just comment that, you know, my intervening was based on water contamination that has happened in the past, and I know it doesn't probably have warrant here, but I do find that the findings of contamination in False Bottom Creek does have some that should be considered in making this decision on whether or not they get the expansion, you know, until those are cleaned up. So I guess that would be my comment at this time. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for your participation, and I'll move on to board consideration of my proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law and order. I think briefly, I believe that based on the evidence that was presented by the parties, that WRF has fulfilled its requirement in its application for the Boston expansion. We heard from WRF, we've heard from and their witnesses, we've heard from the department and its witnesses. I think the testimony was credible by the parties and in favored approval of the application and to grant the permit subject to certain conditions that have been presented to the board, and they're largely, if not all, incorporated in, I think, Exhibit A that protect the concerns of the state, at least from my finding and recommendation. Certainly there was discussion. The primary concern presented, it appears, was the dealing with the current selenium issue at False Bottom Creek, as you just mentioned, Ms. Marshall. And that there are certain findings that exceed the requirements of the Federal Clean Water Act, I think, which the state then acknowledges in SDCL 45-6B-87. This matter was addressed, I think, by the parties. We heard testimony from Ms. Hudson and Ms. Busher from the state of their concerns, and that those findings of the selenium were findings that exceed those allowed by the Clean Water Act, as I understand it. And then, therefore, they're technically, you know, I think, a violation of the statute. However, and during the proceedings, I don't think anybody disagrees as to that fact, that there are excess findings of selenium. Maybe WRF is not in complete agreement that it's in violation, but there were no objections to the testimony and the exhibits of that characterization of it. And I do want to say that I don't think there was any intent or any negligence by WRF on how this selenium arrived under their custody. I think it was historically something that happened, and the department brought it to their attention, and everybody has stepped up to agree to address it, and that's the main thing. I mean, and so I feel comfortable that the state's interest is being served by that. So we come to our decision about it, or my recommendation to the board, and that decision is pretty much ruled by SDCL 46-6B-32. And that statute essentially requires us, as the board, to approve that permit in the event that they meet the conditions of the application, except for the conditions 1-7 that are allowed, that were allowed, in my estimation, in reading of the statute, some discretion of whether those affect the permit application enough to deny the permit. And I think, again, based on the discussion that we've had, evidence presented, method of mitigating and addressing that issue, I do not see it as a major concern or major reason to be denying WRF this application and the permit. So I think my findings are, and finding fact and conclusions of law, attempt to address this matter from a board discretionary finding, and while the technical violation, I believe, does exist, it's there and has been testified to, we are adequately addressing it and will address it under a plan agreed to between WRF and the department. So that's kind of an explanation of my findings. I'm happy to answer questions from other board members as to why I'm recommending approval based on that understanding that this is going to be mitigated and addressed. So that will conclude my remarks, and it is now up to the board by motion to either approve my findings in whole or in part, or to propose amendments, or at this time it's, I guess, in the board's court to decide whether they want to accept those recommendations. So I'll leave it at that at this time. In fact, I'll have Mr. Blumhardt, as the vice chairman, take care of any motions or other matters that might be brought up at this time.
Chairman Blumhardt, point of procedure.
Mr. Marsh.
Do we want to make a motion, see if there's a second, and have discussion, or do you want comments or observations prior to a formal motion?
I think probably work the best if we have a motion, a second, and then open the floor for discussion.
Chairman Blumhardt, Morris would move to adopt the hearing examiner's recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order.
We have a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
This is Gary Haig. I'll second.
All right, Gary, thank you. We have a motion and a second. We will now open the floor for discussion. Someone, if you have questions for hearing chair, Mr. Haig.
Chairman Blumhardt.
Mr. Morris.
I have no questions of Mr. Haig. Even though I attended the hearing live, I also took the opportunity and the time to read the transcript. One of the things that I know throughout the discussion, throughout the hearing, was this issue, the violation of the selenium standards. I discussed with Mr. Zietlow on page 112 through 117 of the transcript concerning that issue, and throughout the hearing, even the department's witnesses essentially corroborated that this is something that happened. The levels became started to become measurable, and no one really knows what the causative effect or causation was as to why that came about. And I believe from the department standpoint, they have felt that the wharf was a working toward a resolution. The department appeared to be satisfied. And even though there was no formal notice of violation, there was a recognition that there was an issue and that there was no willfulness, there was no gross negligence or anything like that that led to or that caused this problem. But it's now recognized, and the department and wharf have been working together to address the mitigation issue. The reason I bring that up is if you read the hearing examiner's findings of fact and conclusions of law, when you see violation, you may look at it and you may stop and you may go, whoa. But we've had the benefit of the context of the information of the evidence, and what I found very compelling was the hearing examiner determined that all witnesses were credible on both sides. And I think Ms. Marshall should, on one hand, be congratulated, although her focus was on, the past. I think she did, along with the department and along with the wharf, brought to the forefront the issue that we have this selenium issue, and you really have to understand and hear and read and review the record so that you have appropriate context. It will be my intent to vote to adopt the hearing examiner's findings of fact and conclusions of law, with the understanding that we have a record, we have all the evidence, and that you really have to appreciate all that information in conjunction with the hearing examiner's findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman.
This is strictly board, yeah. Mr. Carpenter.
Yes, I'd like to piggyback on Mr. Morris there a little bit. Yes, I had similar feelings, but my understanding was, if I'm correct, is the regulations are, the readings would be zero until they reach a certain level, then all of a sudden there's an uptick, or if there was an uptick, the regulations changed, in which it was no longer zero. And that, identified that for me, and that helped me along the ways. Yes, I will also be agreeing with the findings, but I would make a request that would be that the department, or even more, whoever needs to do it, is like a quarterly report on this instead of an annually or whatever on that selenium values, to see if we keep tracking up, we're going to have to have a better understanding and get our arms around a little more. But I am, but I will vote yes for this motion.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Other board members?
Yes, this is Gary Hay.
Yeah, Gary.
I would agree with the other board members. My one comment is that WARF or the department keep us up to date on their schedule for implementing a treatment system.
Okay. I'm seeing nods, Gary, but the nod doesn't do you any good. we are getting nods from the department people.
Okay, that's good.
Other board members?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Would have to agree. That was one thing that would cause me any hesitation was us not getting any updates of any kind on this and just kind of letting it sit in the department without us being notified as well. So I would agree as well, as long as we're getting some sort of regular update on this.
All right.
I'll just respond briefly to the comments. I think they're all very well taken. Part of the reason I wanted to echo the department's finding of the technical violation, but also making sure everybody understands that we are addressing this problem. As we move on, board members, and we're no longer here and so forth, sometimes it's hard to, for new people, I know it was for me, to track history and things like that. That's why we have the department to track that history. So I found it important maybe to include it in here as well as the plan. I think from the hearing, my request was that it would be put into part of the plan of Exhibit A so that we have an ongoing record for it. But as Mr. Morris said, it's important to have the transcript and understand that this is not something that that we find any intent or anything on behalf of WARF. It's just there. It just happened. The term was used throughout the hearing by the department as being a technical violation. And, I think in the big picture, this is the way to handle things. You find something come up, you find an issue, the board gets together with the parties, they work out a way to mitigate this. It's still there, but they find out the plan to mitigate it, and the public should certainly know that that's the extent of this violation and what it was. And it just needs to be addressed, but it exists. So I appreciate the comments, and I think they're well taken.
I don't think that this is race judicata on any type of violation or causation issue. I mean, we're ruling as it relates to the permit. I don't think that we've tried to make findings of fact or conclusions of law as they relate to causation and different things. And, I didn't hear WARF saying, I think that there are still remedies available beyond the conditions set forth in the permit under CERCLA for owners and operators and many other things that don't need to be addressed and aren't addressed in the findings of fact and conclusions of law. And to the extent that those other remedies and things are available, and to the extent that this isn't res judicata as it relates to findings on those issues, I'll be supporting them.
Thank you, Mr. Rehill. Anything else from the board?
Chairman Blumhorn, if I may.
Sure.
Steve Blair with the department, representing the department. I would just like to note for the record that the conditions imposed if the permit is adopted do require WARF in regards to the selenium issue to submit monthly updates to the department regarding their development of plans to remediate the elevated selenium concentrations. So that is already included in the conditions.
And the department, and I'm sure, I don't want to speak for WORC, but I'm sure that they would be willing to cooperate in any way that the board wishes in providing further information regarding that issue.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Black. Mr. Zietlow.
Yes, I think it's 100% confirmed with that, and I was going to raise the exact issue is that there are criteria not only in wine permit that's up for discussion as part of this hearing, but also in the draft ABDS permit has similar verbiage. So the reporting is a criteria of both of those, and anything else the board would like to see will not be an issue for us to present, whether it's in person or through the department in terms of frequency.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Zietlow. Any other? Ms. Marshall, do you have any comments?
Yes, I would like to make a comment that going forward here, like I had mentioned while I was at the hearing on May 18th, is the how the reports are fulfilled from the company, such as WORC or any other mining company, but how they're fulfilled and how they're presented to the department to include that data into the spills map, and that those be accountable, so that we know what units were spilled and how much was spilled and, that type. In regards to the selenium, I didn't find anything of that nature on that spilled map. Of course, it's coming from a historical standpoint, so apparently it wouldn't be on there. But, I would just like to see that these companies and that the state work together to make sure that any type of toxic spills or anything that is transparent, and that we, that those are fulfilled and accurately. And if they don't get filled accurately, that they can go back to the company and say we need to know how many units were spilled or something on those nature, so that we can have a better understanding of what is really happening. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Call for the question.
Right. Include the motion.
Including the motion.
Yeah. Some board member want to make a motion to, or one of us, right? We've already done that. Okay.
All right.
Then we want to call the roll.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hay?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Chairman Hay?
Aye.
The motion is approved. Now I get to pass the mic back.
All right, we'll move on to the next order of business of the meeting. Oral mining reports.
Rex.
Sorry.
I got it. Yeah.
Yes, Carla, thank you very much for your help.
Patience.
Yeah, patience and help. And well, that closes that matter. Move on to the oral mining reports. The Lac Minerals, up first, I guess.
Mark, there is a little mic attached to that right in front of you. No? Yeah, that's how you turn it on. But the mic is just a lapel one that I stuck on that other thing. Yeah, you don't have to take it off. I was just letting you know it's there.
Okay.
You can move that thing around.
Just one second before we start. Eric, as far as the bond portion of that, based on our finding, the adoption of the findings, is that to be addressed at the next meeting?
What we need right now is, I think it would, I talked to Steve on it earlier. Since we have in the conditions, the amounts and everything, you guys approve the findings and conditions, I would assume that suffices as you approve of the amounts.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And okay. Then WORC will let it to work on getting, I think, surety bonds for those amounts. Whether writers or however they want to handle that, those will be presented to the board at the next meeting for your approval.
And as I understand, the actual permit isn't issued until those are in place.
That's correct. Okay. So we need to have those instruments in place.
All right. Thank you. All right. Sorry. Proceed on.
Good morning. I'm Mark Thiessen. I'm the environmental manager for Homestake in Richmond Hill. And I'm pleased to be here this morning to give you the annual updates on sites. Starting with the Homestake Mining Company. Our combined Homestake Richmond Hill employment at the end of 2022 was 9 FTEs plus 2 full-time contract employees and 1 part-time employee. We had 2022 contributions of approximately $20,000. This included $3,000 in a couple of local scholarships for our college scholarships for local students. Homestake Mine open cut review. Reclamation has been completed at the waste rock facilities. This is essentially unchanged from last year. We have about 555 acres released, with about 87 remaining affected acres. And reclamation is completed on all of those remaining affected acres. We just haven't had them released yet. Some 2022 activities. Barrick entered into an option agreement with Dakota Gold Corp in 2021 for both the Homestake and Richmond Hill properties. Dakota Gold may exercise the Homestake option on before September 7th, 2024. And the Richmond Hill option has been extended for an additional 18 months, extending it out to about March of 2026. So out at the Grizzly Gulch Tailings Storage Facility, we have a new closure water level that's lower than what we have traditionally kept the water levels. And as such, we've exposed more tailings. Those tailings are scheduled to be covered in 2025. Until then, we needed to do something for dust suppression there. And so we ended up using a soil works product called Gorilla Snot. It's a good dust suppressant. It's non-hazardous and non-toxic, biodegradable. Is non-leaching and UV resistant. The product application is pretty simple. We just spray it on the surface. That penetrates into that surface and dries as a flexible cover. It's fairly water resistant and holds up pretty well for at least a year. We're kind of testing it to see how long it'll last. Monitoring at the site. Monitoring continues to show that the surface water around the Homestake Mine site remains excellent and meets all water quality standards. Aquatic biological monitoring was conducted in 2022. I added a little more detail in these slides than I traditionally have. Habitat, there have been minor changes over time, but these are due to variations in flow and high flow events. Installation of 2 culverts under Highway 14A in 2019 and 2022 also introduced sediment into Deadwood Creek during the construction, but most of that accumulated sediment has now been flushed downstream. Fish populations in Deadwood Creek, the brook trout, as I've reported in the past, we were hit with a large storm in 2010 that completely wiped out the fish population there. We reported in 2011 6 trout that we caught with electrofishing through that whole stretch of stream. We had 566 this year with both young deer and adult fish. We have successful reproduction and rearing at all sites. Adult fish were collected at equal or greater numbers than young deer at the sites. And the data are similar at upstream sites and downstream sites of upfall 13, which is the upfall from Black Hill Water Treatment Plant. Macroinvertebrates, so this is your insects and a couple of different kinds of worms and snails. They're comparable between all sites. The similarities between control sites and downstream sites, and between sites upstream and downstream of outfall 013. There was some minor stress at all the sites in 2022 due to periodic low flows, natural year-to-year variations, and other external factors. The changes are due to factors that affect all four sites and are not due to discharge from outfall 013. In fact, the values downstream of outfall 013 are more favorable than the upstream sites. For paraffin, which are algae and diatoms, just a complex mixture of different things, like macroinvertebrates, environmental stresses appear to be affecting the paraffin similarly at all sites, including the upstream control sites. That indicates no adverse effects from outfall 013. Overall, the paraffin communities have been stable through this monitoring period of 2004 and 2022. So fish tissue sampling, this is the tissue sampling that we do for selenium analysis. Fish for tissue analysis collected from Redwood Creek in 2022 at low monitoring sites. The fish tissue sample results from this sampling include values from 2022 were well below the genus mean chronic value of 11.6 milligrams per kilogram whole body dry weight and the conservative EPA whole body criterion of 8.5 milligrams per kilogram. Most of the, or all of the sites were between a high of 5 down into the 3s. The geometric mean values for all sites in 2022 were within the historic ranges. And values for downstream sites A and C were actually lower in 2022 than in 2021 and were below their long-term geometric means. So overall, the aquatic biological monitoring data collected through the monitoring period of 2004 to 2022 is not indicating any negative mine-related effects on aquatic communities.
For some reason, I can't pick up.
Water quality. Blacktail water treatment plant treats water emanating from the toes of the Saw and East Waste Rock facilities. The water treatment plant system removes selenium and total dissolved solids, of which most of it is sulfates, from water prior to discharging to Denver Creek. Blacktail water treatment plant discharge consistently meets the permitted effluent limits and the surface water quality standards. And the in-stream selenium and TDS levels are well below surface water quality standards and have been since the water treatment plant began in 2006. Geotechnical monitoring. We employ a number of different kinds of displacement monitoring techniques. We use survey monuments and prisms, which include our robotic total station and GPS methods. We have piezometers to measure water levels and water pressures within the waste rock facilities. Inclinometers to measure any movement at depth. Visual inspections and INSAR satellite monitoring. So prisms and survey monuments, the baseline and current survey is performed in South Dakota State Plain coordinates utilizing robotic total station instruments. A new baseline was established with state plain coordinates in December of 2019. New trend line movement rates were developed for survey monuments and prisms during the November 22 review, and they indicate no significant movement from prior monitoring. So the East Block area, this is the area that we've talked about a number of times. That area failed on June 14th, 2019. It's all completely contained within the pit boundary on homestead controlled property. The measurements don't indicate a new area of instability or significant upslope enlargement of existing instability. The remaining crest, there's no indications of other recent movements that could represent any kind of a potential for substantial slope failures. A little bit on the monitoring for the East Block. Monitoring prisms were installed atop the 2006 failure and atop and behind the east block prisms for the 2006 failure area are stable, and the east block prisms indicate incremental vertical movement as expected. Numerous prisms are also on the south wall and on either side of the pile. Those are stable. The long baseline neutrino facility excavation disposal, disposal rock started in May of 2021, and that pile runs down the inside slope of the down slope of the pit for about 560 vertical feet. At the East Waste Rock facility, a new baseline survey was taken to state plant coordinates in 2019 utilizing GPS. And new trend line movement rates for survey monuments developed during the November 22 view indicate no significant movement from prior monitoring. As far as the pedometers go, there's no significant buildup of water levels in that waste rock facility. So inclinometers, there's inclinometers installed in Blacktail and East Ravine. They've indicated no significant changes since previous monitoring. I reported on the inclinometer in Gago last year. It was installed in June of 2018, and it's indicated about a hundredth of an inch of per month of shear displacement at 106 to 108 feet below the ground surface. It's small and constant with no signs of acceleration, so the plan right now is just to continue to monitor it. Visual inspections. We reported on a tension crack at 5100 bench at Gabriel for a number of years. Still no significant change there, and it appears to be associated just with the topsoil sloping. Satellite monitoring. Data indicates that the dump is behaving as expected, with no significant issues. 2023 Home State Projects, we're continuing our agreement with the South Dakota Science and Tech Authority, continuing our water treatment at Blacktail and the Yates facilities, and we're just finishing up the Home State Coastal Winter Bond update. In fact, it's pretty much done. We're just doing a little bit more research on discount and inflation rates, and we're planning to update and post the bond update, I believe, in September. Thank you.
Questions regarding from the board regarding the home state portion of the presentation?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Morris.
I see you have an option agreement with Dakota Gold concerning to acquire the Homestake and Richmond Hills properties.
Yeah.
Does that include the open cut and all these other properties?
It includes the properties that are up at the mine site proper, is what I'll say. We have ranch lands, you know, down along Gulf, along Lightwood Creek and Gulf Rouge River, and doesn't have those areas. It's just the areas that were out of the mine. So it would be like the waste rock facilities, the open cut. I believe it includes Yates and Grizzly Gulch as well.
Okay. Now, presently, Homestake has posted surety bonds with the department or with the board for post-closure reclamation and all of those sorts of things. And is, do you know off the top of your head how much the total surety is?
The reclamation surety is very small. I want to say it's less than $100,000, I believe.
So, yeah.
And the post-closure bond is $61 million and change.
Okay. And not to get into any proprietary information or anything like that, let's assume that Dakota Gold exercises its option and acquires the property, is Dakota Gold then responsible for the post-closure bond and any reclamation bond?
That bond would have to be, it would have to continue to be held, I believe, is my understanding. And how that exactly would work out, I don't know. But they would, the new owner would be essentially, I believe, responsible for those bonds.
Okay. If I may inquire, Eric.
Yes.
Eric, if you're given notification by Homestake that Dakota Gold has exercised its option, is then Dakota Gold required to go through the process to post bonds, the surety bonds equivalent to the existing bonds held by Homestake?
It depends on what Dakota Gold would do. If they applied for new mine permits, they would have to submit bonds as part of that. Also, they would have the option of transferring Homestake's and LAC's existing permits over to the new company, and as part of the permit transfer process, they would have to submit replacement bonds for the Homestake and LAC have for those operations.
So even though there's an option agreement, that sounds like DANR and the board have to be actively involved in that if the potential transfer or option exercise takes place.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions?
Right. Go ahead and proceed. Thanks.
So, the Richmond Hill Mine. Reclamation acreage overview, we have 262 total released acres, 75 remaining acres, of which 72 of those acres are currently used for water treatment. And we have 2.66 acres to be reclaimed in the short term, and that includes the discharge ponds and the original sludge basin, and those are scheduled to be reclaimed starting here very quickly, but reclaimed this year. 2022 activities. Mentioned it, and we talked about the option agreement, and that option agreement is extended out to March 26. So one of the big things in starting in 2021 and then in 2022 is the sludge removal from the storage pond. Sludge was removed in preparation for repairs and installation of a new primary liner. This sludge was deposited in the on-site sludge pond. This is the new sludge pond that's just toward the south of those three ponds shown in that drawing, or in that big photo. There's approximately 8,000 cubic yards removed in 2021 and 2022. So the damaged liner from the 2021-2022 winter and liner damage during that sludge removal process was repaired or replaced. Repairs were required for sloped areas on the east and west side and damaged flat areas in the bottom of the pond. And we had about 200,000 square feet of liner replaced. I should add here that this has been a single line pond. We're not using processed chemicals per se there any longer. This has always been single line. Our original intent was going to be to take this liner out and then put in a new liner. Instead, what we decided to do was to go ahead and get the sludge out of there, repair the original liner, put in some geonet, and then add a new primary liner, and this would be the existing liner become the secondary liner in the system. So basically, we're going to the same liner to the line facility. So water management and treatment. The leach pads and ponds, biological water treatment plant operations are conducted for saline treatment. We operate a biological plant with the RO discharging about 16.5 million gallons, and we operate the biological water treatment plant independently over the winter months during 2022, discharging 2.73 million gallons. As of June 28th, we had about approximately 8.8 million gallons of water stored in the ponds. The storage pond, the large storage pond that's being relined, is essentially empty. So this is in the desludge pond and the feed pond. Leach pad effluent flows averaged approximately 25 gallons per minute in 2022. And leach pad effluent flows were modestly higher than 2021. But still very low. Precipitation was below average in both years, resulting in continued lower infiltration rates. Bruce Gulch is the site of the reclaim site of the waste rock disposal facility. The water treatment includes pH adjustment of sodium hydroxide as needed, and the nearby South Gulch water is pumped into Bruce Gulch treatment pond for treatment. Monitoring activities. 2022 pit backfill monitoring cavity system monitoring continues to indicate that the cap is functioning to and better than design expectations. And the leach pad capping system continues to perform well, limiting infiltration. So aquatic biological monitoring was conducted at Richmond Hill as well. The habitat characteristics have been similar with monitoring period from 2006 to 2022. Started monitoring a couple of years later up there than we did at home state. There were minor changes occurring during some of the years with high spring flows. Large substrates that are indicative of that area, bedrock and armored stream banks, tend to be resistant to the large flow-induced changes in stream morphology. Fish population data indicates that mine-related activities upstream from compliance points 1, 2, and 3 did not adversely affect fish community in Cleopatra Creek. And mine-related activities upstream from compliance point 4 also did not affect the community in Rubicon Gulch. Assessment of the metrics over time indicated that all sites continue to support a healthy fish community. Macroinvertebrates. The benthic macroinvertebrate communities were healthy at all Cleopatra Creeks and at the Labrador and Rubicon Gulch sites. Macroinvertebrate metrics were similar at all sites to what has been observed in previous years, and no site was consistently characterized by lower or higher metrics than the other sites over time. For periphyton, no substantial temporal trends or between site differences occurred, and the community data at control sites and sites downstream of mine-related activities. The lack of temporal changes suggests that variations in the periphyton community were primarily attributed to natural factors such as flow, sedimentation, and stream size. Assessment of these metrics over time indicate that all sites continue to support a high density and diversity of periphyton. So overall, the habitat, macroinvertebrate, periphyton, and fish data do not demonstrate a decrease in water quality at sites downstream of the Richmond Hill mine, or indicate significant differences in water quality between sites upstream and downstream of the mine. The data from 22 and past years do not indicate any apparent effects of mine-related activities on aquatic biota. Instead, stream size, physical habitat attributes like sedimentation flow and natural environmental variability affect population size and composition over time in this system. So water quality at the site is generally stable or improving. Cleopatra Creek water quality monitoring confirms there are no impacts to the Richmond Hill mine. And monitoring is continuing, and site-specific performance criteria were developed with the EAMR and approved by the board to ensure continued protection of the environment. For our 2023 plans, install the new primary liner over the existing liner in the storage pond. This is ongoing as we speak. We've got about half of the pond lined at this point. We've just got the new sump built, and that's all done. That's kind of a critical thing to get done so that we get additional rain. It helps our management of that a lot while we finish the pond. We're going to replace the RO unit this winter, and we're going to continue, or we're going to reclaim the discharge ponds and original sludge basin in the near future, completing that by the end of the year, and continue water treatment and monitoring activities. Thank you.
Questions? Is there any comment from the department on, regarding the presentation or questions? All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Just a quick matter of, it would not be my intent to break for lunch, that we push through and finish the agenda. So after we do couple more of my reports, but certainly we can take a break if anybody wants to grab the bending or anything. I guess we can do that, but I guess somebody's got an objection to that.
Is Lack and VMC here?
Then Lack, that was the first one. We're
on Matt right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the representatives of Lack or BMC here for a presentation.
BM, LAC just did their church and hill is LAC.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're.
BMC has to call in. And
okay.
So we're letting them know now.
Okay. All right, so we'll move on. Zilo, go ahead. Warp.
Matt Zilo, Barrel Manager, just to the warp operation. I'll say one thing up front, some of it for most of you that were there in June, some of this will be redundant, so bear with. As usual, we'll touch on the mining update and production side, projects, of course, several slides on the community demographics, tax base, impacts, things like that, and then a few comments on our ongoing activities going forward to 2023. So another quick overview with this aerial. You'll see the only thing I've really changed on this from last year, I did highlight specifically that Colossian expansion area that we've been discussing over the last few months. That is essentially congruent with Portland Ridge there. And the reason I mention that specifically is much like I presented last year, all of the mining that's going on right now, as well as through the projected end of mine life, is along that Portland Ridge line. And just that same thing right there. The Green Mountain area, which is kind of in the background of this picture, that's all being backfilled right now. We're in the deepest portion of what we call the Portland Port itself, which is directly below where these trucks sit. We're probably 2 to 3 weeks out from wrapping up mining in there, and then continuing pushing towards the west, which is why, as I'll touch on in a minute here, we're moving the access road in the coming months as well. So a few things on the production side. You compare this to last year, you'll see there's very little change in the tonnages that were mined, both for ore as well as waste rock and the rehandled material. The ounces of gold and silver both were down, and that was just simply a product of the grade. The tonnages were almost identical to the previous year. Leach pad, very much the same story there. 1 in 4 pads, 1 in 4 both wrapped up their unification process as well. And pad 1 has been completely offloaded. We're just finishing up with pad 4. That's a note there, pad 5, denitrification actually initiated late in 2022, and we're just about done with that right now as well. We'll probably be moving into the offloaded portion of that here just within the next several weeks. And then pads 2 and 3 just continued as planned, just a normal leash level shift there. for the year, as I mentioned, given the fact that we're mining in an area that's already been disturbed, that's reflected by that first bullet there. We didn't actually have any, it was less than an acre of disturbance affected for the year. The total affected areas still sitting there at 1280. Fair amount of reclamation last year activities and projected for this year as well. As you can see, a little under 50 last year. We projected to have a little over 60 this year. We've been a little bit hindered so far this summer with the pretty steady rains basically since April. We're running at about almost 150% of average pre-season so far this year. So we're hoping to still be able to hit that 60 acre mark for this year, but we'll see what the weather brings. Employee number pretty much the same. We're down a little bit just because we have a few openings still. That's pretty much steady. Continues to be a bit of a challenge. I'll touch on that a little bit with a slide down the road here. 98 million gallons of total groundwater pumps. Quite a bit of that went back through surface application infiltration, almost 70 million gallons. Just as an added note, we're actually well above that already this year. We're actually almost 100 million gallons returned this year just because of all the rains. So some of these projects, you know, this is one of the slides that look pretty familiar from June. Again, just a good cause for celebration. So this was 40 years of continuous operation for Wharf. Pretty big deal there for us. And we had a number of things to kind of commemorate that. We are continuing with our agreement with Black Hills Power. We've got 48% of our electrical power, our grid power, is coming in from renewable sources, so that's a good thing. The backfilling of Tremont Pit is part of those reclamation procedures, as well as the soloing and then ultimately topsoiling, started the topsoiling of that Trojan Rock facility, which is on the far north end of the property, about a half mile uphill from Falls Mountain Spring. As we've talked about quite a bit over the last few months there, the water quality studies, initiation of the pilot treatment tests, of the bench scale pilot treatment tests, all that occurred during last year, as I've talked about before. We also did another year of fish flesh analysis in Falls Bottom. I mentioned this as well in June, and that again showed, even with the elevated saline values that are above the surface water standard, we continue to meet the case criteria for fish flesh. In January of last year is when the CUP, the conditional use permit for the county, was issued. And as you're aware, of course, we continued with our progress with the large scale mining permit, culminating with today. And I'm just moving on to the bond side of that. And then preparation and clearing and the corridor prep for the gas powered water line move that will be needed for the Boston expansion. So that all occurred within the existing mine property. So we took it as far as we could. And we can wrap that stuff up later on this year. So some of the socioeconomic and demographic information, just under $30 million total payroll last year. If we had a full staff of 250 to 55, we're going over 30 million. That continues to go up a couple million every year. Very little change in the demographics there. You'll see the way that the population spread is. We're still close to 100% from within Black Hills proper. So that's certainly cause for success there. But as with pretty much all businesses in our area, there's not an excess of employees looking for work, that's for sure. On the tax side, one thing you'll notice comparing it to last year, all but the state 7 tax were up a little bit. A lot of that's been just simply driven by the increase in cost of goods and services, inflation. The state severance tax is down simply because of the lower production in terms of ounces. Very similar here to the tax side. The purchases, even though they were pretty similar in terms of the previous year, the costs were higher. And that's why this is up to almost around $10 million actually from the previous year. That's largely driven by inflation. So a few updates here on the community involvement side. Pretty similar to previous years, 160,000 plus to several dozen local entities there. That second bullet kind of touches on some of the larger ones. That's pretty similar year on year, but as I mentioned, there's over four dozen separate entities there, not including scholarships. A couple of neat things there with that third bullet, we actually went over $600,000 now for distributions from the War Sustainability Fund. That was started in 2012, and that we're actually getting pretty close to, if you remember back to 2012, the initial seed money for that was $1 million. And distributions come out kind of a somewhat fixed amount every year, but WRF continues to also resupply that, and we're now coming up pretty close to $2 million in that. So really good success over there, for not just for WRF, but certainly for communities. And then in addition to all of the above there, about $60,000 in local scholarships. So moving forward then, as we just saw earlier today, the Boston permit itself, we reached that milestone, and then, as Eric mentioned, we'll be moving into the bonding piece of that here within the next several weeks. We'll be continuing to mine that same Portland Bridge deposit. As I said, that bullet will show up every year for quite a while. That's everything that we've got in front of us is in that Portland Bridge area. Path 5 denitrification process is well underway. We'll start that offload probably in the early part of August. Backfilling, again, is continuing along with that concurrent reclamation within the old Green Mountain pit. That's also the same area that the new access road would be kind of rubbing through the property there as we run our way further west. Wrapping up completion on the lower part of that Trojan Rock facility, as I mentioned. The field pilot studies are moving forward. We anticipate getting those placed in the first part of August. The selenium treatment will be the actual design will be the final process will then occur over the winter months, and then in the spring of next year is when we'll submit those ultimate plans to the state for approval. That access road I mentioned a couple times already. Plans to have that usable this fall, early in the fourth quarter. And something kind of neat, we are trialing some drone applied leaf spraying this year. We're going to test it over at the Golden Board area for kind of the first try. It's more open over there, and a good chance to see how that can work. One other note, I didn't add the bullet for it, but it's specific to Golden Board. Hopefully, before the end of this year, we're back in front of you to bring up the transfer approval for those remaining buildings at Golden Board. You might recall from the agreements from 2012 that WRF would be giving those to Black Hills Chairlift at the cessation of mining and reclamation, along with the pond that's there to be used for water storage for snowmaking and a 20-acre piece of ground around it. So we're at the point now where we can move forward with that. Black Hills Chairlift is going to get several weeks, and we're ready for that whenever we get there. Hopefully we get that from you pretty quick. This is, I don't really need to redo this one, I guess, but these are just a few bullets that you recognize from the Boston expansion. And I'm glad to see we're at the point that where we are. It will add up to around a 2 to 3 year window of extension of mine life into that 2030 range. So I was looking forward to that. Questions?
Questions? Thank you, Mr. Zelo. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Move on to the MC.
Bart Nelson.
Hi, this is Bart Nelson. I'm on the phone. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're coming in clear. Thank you.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Thank you so much for all the work you do. Very, very tough work, tough decisions that you're charged with making. And just want to let you know that we all really appreciate your time and your efforts. I am a member of the board of managers of BMC LLC, and we hold large-scale mine permit 460. My annual report this year will be very brief. We did not conduct any operations under the mine permit 416 in the last year, and we have no current plans to conduct operations under that permit
in the near future. So that really wraps it up for me. I would be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Questions from the board? Thank you for your time and calling in and your patience in waiting. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you are very welcome. Okay, thank you all. Bye.
Okay, we'll move on. Agenda update on Brome EPA Superfund site. Let's.
I'm just going to stay here.
That's fine.
Okay, so as everybody is aware, we have three agencies involved in the Gilt Edge Superfund site. US EPA is the lead agency in the reclamation. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is their site manager, site contract manager, and then, of course, the Department of Ag and Natural Resources also participates in the reclamation. Currently, the cost for remediation of the site is split. 90% is paid for by EPA, and the state contributes 10% of the remediation costs. Once the cleanup is done at the site, the state will then be responsible for 100% of all water collection, treatment, and site maintenance costs at Gilt Edge. Currently, what we have available for the state, as far as bonds for the Gilt Edge site, we have almost $9 million available for the forfeited bond plus the interest that's been accrued over time. Settlements that have been made on the Brome mine have accrued about $10.8 million. And then Agnico has also been paying lease options for the site to pay for mineral leases, and that has come to $10,500. For a total of nearly $20 million worth of funds available for the state to use for remediation of the site. As you can see here, this is a map of the site, and it shows three different areas. This is how it's been split out for how the remedial option is addressed at the site. Operable Unit 1 is addressing all acid rock piles and open pits at the site. It is the bright green there in the middle. Operable Unit 2 is water treatment, and that is site-wide, so everything within the red hashed area. And then Operable Unit 3, which is the Ruby Waste Rock facility in blue, and that one is actually somewhat, I think it's interim reclamation, but that is completely. This is another picture of the Gilt Edge site. What you see here is the main areas. The green areas are the areas that will all eventually be covered with a plastic cap and soil cover. And then the areas in yellow will actually be the lined ARD and sludge ponds. So those will continue to be used through water treatment in the future. The areas in blue are areas that have existing acidic fill and parent ground, and they have to be treated with line amendments. And then areas in red just need some earth cover to complete remediation site. Currently in 2022, all that happened there was normal site maintenance and water treatment activities. There was no additional activities done at the site, no remedial actions. Hydrogeologic was the site contractor in charge of the site in 2022. They keep six employees on site. That includes a manager, mechanic, and four plant operators. In 2022, we treated 66 million gallons of water, which is slightly more than 2021, but still half of what happened in 2020. That was when we had the really big moisture years. Lots of rain events happened in 2020. And then also in 2022, we had 25.3 million gallons of water in storage in the Anchor Hill pit, which is slightly more than 2021 and pretty comparable and within range of what's been happening at the site in the past several years. We had no major weather events in 2022, and the average precipitation, it maintained average precipitation at the site. It was less, a little bit less than what happened in 2021. So we had a couple inches less rain last year than the year before. I spoke briefly about this particular item in March before the board meeting. We discussed the Gilt Edge Mine Conveyance Act. This was the act before U.S. Congress to allow the state to purchase Forest Service properties within the Gilt Edge Superfund boundary. In February, we submitted that letter requesting purchase of those properties. And the process has started, but there hasn't really been any additional updates. We've been working back and forth with Forest Service, but the next step hasn't quite happened yet, so it's in progress. So just to recap, the areas in green on this map are all U.S. Forest Service lands located within the Superfund boundary. So those are the lands there that would be up for our purchase through that Conveyance Act. Another thing that's happened at the mine site is that Eagle USA Limited has been up there doing some activities. They are a Canadian-based gold producer, and they do have interest in redeveloping the Gilt Edge Mine. In 2014, they approached the EPA and SDDNR to discuss interest in investigating the possibility of remining the Gilt Edge Mine. And while pursuing that idea, the three groups identified different environmental investigations that could be conducted that would be beneficial to the ongoing Superfund remedial investigations into the site, as well as Agnico's mining feasibility study. And in 2018, EPA, DENR, and Agnico entered into an administrative order of consent where Agnico would perform environmental studies and core drilling as a CERCLA bona fide prospective purchaser. And the focus of those environmental studies was to provide additional data for determining sources of caffeine in Strawberry Creek through surface and subsurface studies. And those investigations, including drilling geologic cores and studying groundwater flow paths and caffeine concentrations on site, as well as studying potential surface sources of cadmium on Strawberry Creek, on the lower portion of Strawberry Creek. Those investigations provided information to EPA and the state for developing future cleanup remedies for the site and for surfacing groundwater. But there was no mining allowed under that agreement. Now in 2023, EPA, the ANR, and Agnico have entered into an administrative settlement for reuse assessment and payment of response costs by a prospective lessee. And in that agreement summary, Agnico is to pay EPA and DENR oversight costs and $2.5 million per year for ongoing Superfund site operations and maintenance, and allows Agnico 3 years to gather data and drill boreholes at the site, and a total of 4 years to decide if remining the site is feasible. So an additional year past that 3 years. If they do decide that it's feasible to remine the Superfund site, they will need to enter into a consent decree on agreement with EPA and DANR to set the terms and conditions in applying for a mine permit and deferring the Superfund cleanup. And if they decide it's not feasible to remine the site, then the EPA Superfund cleanup would resume at the site. It should note that this particular administrative settlement for reuse assessment became effective Monday. Any questions?
questions.
Questions about the Superfund site? Mr. Morris?
Thank you, Roberta. Your second to last slide, Agnico determines feasibility, remind the Superfund site, consent decree, et cetera, and the Superfund cleanup will be deferred at that time?
Right, so during this next 3 years, now that this consent is approved and final, for the next 3 years, Agnico basically has oversight on activities at the site, so the site maintenance and water treatment, those are paid for by Agnico. But because they're doing active drilling on site and actively exploring the feasibility, whether it can be feasibly mined again, the Superfund cleanup activities, additional cleanup activities, any dirt work, capping, anything like that, has been put on hold. Because if they do decide to mine, we don't want to have all this work done and then have it undone because they're going to be mining it. We don't want to put money into something that might not happen.
Sure. And my understanding is the biggest cost out here is the annual treatment of water that is affected or contaminated by the acid rock runoff.
Right.
Will that water treatment continue?
That will continue, yes.
And will it continue, let's assume Agnico takes over, will that water treatment continue
yes.
Until it's, I guess, no
yes.
longer needed, which doesn't seem like it's ever going to end, really.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Agnico is doing this study and analyzing whether it's feasible. They pay all the oversight costs, and they also pay an additional $2.5 million per year for ongoing Superfund site operations and maintenance. And that will cover all water treatment at the site and any other maintenance that has to happen to keep the site going. If they do pursue that option, I believe they would be continuing to maintain that or paying for that until a mine permit is in place, at which time it would all be covered under mine bonding and the mine permit, what has to be done and how that would be addressed in the future.
So they'd have to come before us for permit, bonding,
yes.
all of those things?
Yes, yes.
We're probably lucky Lady Karen was not
Mr. Chairman, Carpenter.
Yes, Mr. Carpenter.
Yes, I guess maybe I'm getting way ahead of myself. But I'm looking at, we got the U.S. forestry land, and so if they come in and they want to reintroduce that, does that make that property then available to them also?
You mean if we purchase that?
Yeah, if we get the fancy green shaded area.
If we get all of the Forest Service properties, we're doing that in preparation of assuming that this is not going to happen. Okay, so we actually need these sites under our management because long term, if we need to do any work, especially like on that northern side where we're right on the edge of the disturbance of the Gilt Edge mine, if we have to do any work up there or anything, we have to get Forest Service approval. So if it's all under state management and ownership, then we don't have to do that anymore. We can just say, we gotta get this done. We can't wait 6 months for Forest Service to say it's okay. So that's our benefit for purchasing this land. And it's all happening at the same time. It has nothing to do with Agnico. It's because we're looking long-term at what we need to do to manage this site at the end of Superfund. So that's why we're pursuing that. However, if it does come to the point where we purchase this property and then Agnico does go for the mine permit, they would have potentially get the mineral rights for all of this property, and it would all be, they would have to lease that from the state to get those mineral rights.
Mr. Greenfield, do we pay the federal government fair market value for the property, or do we get a state discount?
That I couldn't tell you. I know that there is going to be a real estate assessment done on the property, but I couldn't tell you what that comes to.
And then do we use settlement money, or what money goes to make the land payment? Is it out of the forfeited bond or the bond, or where does that, or does the state actually write a check?
I believe for the state side, I believe that money will be coming out of the settlement fund, because it comes into part of the long-term management of the site.
I don't like that.
I can't imagine that this property is very valuable that takes it to a super fun site.
Should be a minus.
Yeah, I'm looking. If there's gold here, there's got to be gold here. No more questions.
Well, they look at
it. Any other questions?
None.
All right. Thank you, Roberta. All right. So, I guess we go on down the agenda. Next on the agenda is election of officers.
I'd make a motion to maintain the status quo and re-elect the existing slate of officers.
There's a motion on the floor by Mr. Morris.
Carpenter seconds.
Mr. Carpenter second. Discussion. Hearing none. You want to call the roll, Brendan?
Blumhart?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Jerry Hag?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hag is absent.
Okay, when he comes back, let's make him think that Doyle's in the chair.
Motion carried. Well, okay, we will now open the meeting up to public comments, period, in accordance with South Dakota Codified Law 125.1. Is there anyone here in the audience or online who want to make comment? Hearing none and seeing none.
Yes, this is Carla.
Oh, yeah, okay.
This is Carla Marshall.
Yes, Carla.
Hello, yes. Yeah, it's been nearly the same one going through the PowerPoint online. I have a question for the homestake. At the Grizzly Gulch, there was, I think, 2009 maybe. There was a 633,000 gallon spill there with cyanide solution. And I'm wondering why that has not been reported as a surplus. So I was just, trying to figure that out. You see, I think it's very, very important that we try to clean it up and keep it from being remined, because they're going to have the same problems, I believe. So I think you've got to really take a hard look at these companies coming in. Agnica Eagle does have some violations in Canada. So anyway, that's my comment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments?
It's a comment period, yes.
It's a comment period. Any other comments? Hearing none, we will close the comment portion of this meeting. Next meeting, the way I understand, we're probably going to have to get together. We have a contested case, the way I understand. In fact, Mr. Morris, are you?
You're
the hearing chair.
Yes, I am the hearing chair on. Well, you're just the board member now. No, you're not the chair.
Oh, okay. Will of the people.
We have a contested case hearing scheduled August 20th. It involves the City of Rapid City Solid Waste facility. They're requesting an amendment to their permit that was issued in 2020. And so we will, I've received motions, I believe, July 28th, we have a pretrial conference, and then we will have a contested hearing with witnesses before the full board on August 20th.
17th.
I have the 20th in my head. 17th.
Have me here by yourself.
Today's the 20th.
Yes.
That's all I have for that.
Then we'll have the board accept whatever financial instruments WRF submits for those bonding costs. Okay.
So I think we'll have to be present for that hearing, I guess, for Bob and the contestant. So fortunately, we'll be having to return. Or fortunate. Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? And hear from anyone? All right. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Gavin, second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. Secretary, call the roll on adjournment.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hay? Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hay?
Aye. Motion carries. We are adjourned.